Welcome, welcome everyone to Brawl Talk Radio. You're on the Advice Show, and we are ready for the show. Tonight's show is Police Brutality and Corruption. And if you have been following the Christopher Dorner case and following everything that's been happening with that, that is what inspired tonight's show. There's a lot of people that can relate to Chris Dorner with the corruption, with the police, the racism, the brutality, the constant cases over and over and over we have had. It's just sickening. And some people don't even understand why Chris Dorner is a hero to them. Now, I'm going to bring in my co-host, Ms. Gabriella. How you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking.
So, did you have a chance to look into that case?
Yeah, I did, actually.
And what did you...
You know, from what I got from it was just that, you know, it's just a case of corruption and brutality on, you know, by the hands of the police. It's kind of, it's very unfortunate that this kind of thing actually still happens, but, you know, that's just the way things are these days.
Well, you know, when I first heard about, you know, Chris Dorner and everything, and the man, you know, came out with his manifesto, his letter stating, you know, his case, stating why he was doing what he was doing, you know, it's like, I didn't feel the dude was crazy. I didn't feel the dude was lying. I mean, basically, the man was trying to do the right thing. He was saying, look, I saw this police woman kick this guy who is schizophrenic, and he has dementia. So he got it bad both ways. And this woman is getting a kick out of that. She even, he named in his letter, this woman even had the name Chupacabra. That was her nickname. She got a kick out of making people believe. He named many instances when this one woman named Officer Teresa Evans sat there and abused people. He went to report this. And instead of them getting on to her or disciplining her, he's the one that gets fired. He's the one that gets blackballed, where he cannot get another job as a police officer, and he gets messed over in his Navy career, which he loved. I mean, now imagine, and I imagine this, Ms. Gabriella, you're doing the right thing. You're doing things by the book. You're seeing somebody hurt somebody at your job, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You go tell your supervisor, say, hey, listen, this employee is hurting people, and I'm just letting you know so you can stop it. And what if they fire you for reporting something that's obviously wrong, something that's against the law, and something that, you know, you should be held to a higher standard of due to the fact that you are, let's say, a law enforcement officer, but we take it as a regular job for you. I mean, how would you feel about that, getting fired for doing the right thing?
Yeah, I'd be disgusted, you know. There's nothing else I can say because that's not right for them to fire him for basically doing what he was supposed to do. If you see something, you know, evil is when you see something wrong being done and you don't try to stop it.
Exactly. I mean, just imagine since, you know, you're into the fashion. Imagine that you say something that somebody blackballs you on every website, on every magazine. You can't even do a blog anymore because you're blackballed behind you just doing the right thing. I mean, would that make you kind of like really, you know, over the edge, or how would that send you?
I will be disgusted because the reputation is all you have, you know. And once your reputation is destroyed, it's especially with the internet and everything. There's no way you can come back from that. You know, even if it's 2-3 years down the line, once your reputation is gone, it's gone, and that's it.
And see, this man, you know, he just wanted to, you know, clear his name because basically they put him as a liar, and he was not lying about anything. He was not. He was saying the truth. He even sent, you know, saying, hey, this guy is saying this is what happened to me. This is what's going on. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand why black men was understanding how this man was feeling. Okay? It's a lot of times as black men that we are looked at as criminals. You can have a college degree and still get harassed by the police. It's not that you walk around with your pants hanging behind you, you know, underneath your behind or look like you wearing gang colors or anything. Them police will harass you for many reasons. if you if you look like a thug, they'll harass you. If you, you look like a college educated guy, they'll harass you. Shoot, if you if some of them see you as a black man with a white girl, they definitely gonna harass you in certain areas. I mean, on that tip, they see you, you know, have a nice car. Some of them will stop you, want to question you, ask you, how did you get this car, and all this stuff like that. I mean, black men understood, you know, what this guy was talking about. Now, did you read the part that he was saying about how these other officers were sitting up there calling black people niggas? Did you hear about read about that?
No, I haven't
actually. Well, he was sitting on a bus. And, you know, he's a police officer, Chris Dorner at the time. He's a police officer. And he's seeing these other cops call other black people niggas. And he said he thought he heard wrong, but he had to listen. He heard it again. He asked him, say, hey, don't say that. And they told him, you know, I'm going to say it anytime I can get ready to, whoever I want to say it to. And the man said, you know, he wanted to blow his brains out, but he didn't. But, he, you know, he got into a scuffle with him and was choking the guy. And he pulled him off, whatever. And all that guy was like, what, 22 days off. For saying that on the job with pay, because the police union paid him while he was off. So basically, he's got like a 22-day vacation at the crib. I mean, that made him angry also. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of black men that, you know how this racism feels in regards to the police. And, you know, this stuff got to stop. I mean, because it's nothing but corruption. It's nothing but, you know, evil. And these police, and let's be honest, these police will beat anybody, male or female. I mean, I know you've seen videos of police beating down women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you better not tell that police something. You better not even question the police. If you question, like, well, why are you stopping me, or what's going on, or why are you doing this, why are you doing that, they take it like, oh, hell no, you don't even talk back to me. I mean, they got this, like, you know, you a boy, you a girl to them. So let me ask you a question. You know anybody, you have anybody in your family or has been, you know, harassed by the police or have any stories about the police?
Yeah, plenty of it, especially my male cousins and, you know, uncles and everything like that. You know, a lot of the times they'll get stopped when they're, like, you know, if they're driving a nice car, they'll get stopped. And, you know, just like you said, they'll be asked, how did you get this car? Or there's a lot of times when people just do things like random searches and just, you know, with that racial profiling thing, they'll just kind of assume that just because you're a black man walking around, that you just, that's just some type of criminal offense for some reason. That's how they treat it sometimes. And I don't understand why.
Well, you know, nobody wants to hear it, but, I mean, it's clearly, you know, it's clearly racism. I mean, it's nothing more than that. I mean, I can understand if it was a criminal, and don't even talk about it in the New York area where they do that stop and frisk. They mess with brothers every day now, and they sanction to mess with brothers. They just, they're like, oh, we can stop him, we can mess with you, we can search you anytime you get good and ready because of this law. And we always the ones that's going to suffer behind it. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when we say this as black men, you know, sometimes, you know, sisters don't really get it. They really don't, because the police don't really harass sisters like that. They don't. They harass us as black men. You know, the thing is what made Christopher Dorner so much, fear. He put fear in the eyes. Is that this man, you know, was educated, and this man was highly trained. And that's a fearful thing. A black man with an education is something to fear. They don't care if you're stupid. They don't care if you're dumb. They don't care if you're a rapper. It's the black man that has an education, or the black man that has some sort of business sense of mind, a black man that can make him some money, a black man who's smart, who don't make dumb moves, who keeps his record clean. He does all kind of things. That is the black man that you should fear, at least in their eyes. Now, so let me ask you a question on that. Why do you think they fear black men who are educated and who can do things that's productive? Why do you think that?
Because that'll basically kind of almost get rid of the old way of doing things. Because if you have, you know, a bunch of educated black men, it's the days of the stop and frisk thing and the days of trying to arrest people for sagging pants and just all kind of stuff like that, those days will go away. You know, that kind of thing won't be able to happen anymore, because if enough people that are intelligent are able to come together and actually make a change, that's threatening. And that's actually, it's a very scary thing. You know, if there was some type of movement and a bunch of black men decided, you know what, let's stop messing around in these streets, let's all go to college, make some of ourselves, and actually start some type of revolution and clean up these neighborhoods and, you know, restructure the family, get off of welfare, you know, all this stuff, that would completely turn the whole system upside down. And so
yeah.
I'm not going to say that, you know, I agree with every single thing, but, you know, that this, in this case, but it's a very scary thing, and that's kind of the reason why every time there's an influential black leader, they end up getting killed, because that is actually a very scary thing. They don't want that to happen. Or any minority, for that matter, because I haven't, you know, I've yet to see a successful person from a minority be able to come and really make a change without getting stopped somehow or being called crazy.
Exactly. Let me see. I got three callers sitting in the queue here. Let me see. I can select one in. Caller 2, area code 203. Welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mr. Swolvent. And this is another...
Anyway, area code 706, you on the show? Okay, do you want to answer? Let's see. Area code 469, you on the show?
Hey, what's up, my brother? It's Human Paradox. How are you, brother?
How you doing?
Oh, good, man, good. Just tuning in to you. Y'all talking about the story of the year so far, huh?
Yeah, police brutality, talking about the story of the year, talking about police corruption, racism. I mean, how it in relation it does to, you know, us as black men. And, you know, also not just black men, but they mess with, you know, sisters as well. We're not the only ones.
Right.
But, you know, Ms. Gabriella was saying that, you know, we're talking about what makes, you know, black men be feared, and why Christopher Dorner, you know, was feared is that one thing, you know, he was an educated man. You know, he wasn't a dummy. And, you know, he was, like I say, law enforcement trained, military trained. And, you know, this one man had all the police in that region fearful.
Absolutely.
One man, not like 30 men or a gang of men, just one.
Absolutely. I do want to say, as a black man, that because I've heard some people that I know that sort of hail him as a hero. You know, I really don't think he's a hero in a couple of ways. Number one, you know, he killed some innocent people, man. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I don't give him a black pass just because he's a brother. I know. I've been to L.A. more than once. I know about the corruption of the LAPD. But my biggest thing is, my biggest sadness of really, besides the fact that these people died, and obviously, he lost his life, is that he won't be heard. You know, if he could have done this another way and you know, kind of went to the police, with, you know, say, here's what I know, or go to the Senate, and say, you know, here's what I know about what's going on, kind of be a whistleblower. You know, I think he should have went that direction. But now, but as soon as you start killing innocent people, now all this shit's going to be swept under the rug. And, you know, is he really going to stop the corruption of LAPD? I don't think so. I think his intention was, in his mind at least, was good intentions, you know, that he would be able to change things by being so radical. But I don't think he did it the right way. I just don't.
Well, like that, I don't.
Because as soon as you kill somebody, all bets are off. And, you know,
I don't
now,
condone
now, he,
him,
now,
hurting, killing a young lady, young man. I don't condone that whatsoever. And I, from the beginning, I said I did not condone that at all. I didn't.
And to me, that's a big story. I mean, he kills innocent people. You know, the fact that he's black, is obviously being ballyhooed through the press. But I think that the fact that once he started killing people, to me, the message it takes a back seat. And now he's going to be labeled as, instead of some civil rights, you know, guy, he's going to be labeled as a murderer, you know. And
but it depends on who's labeling him. Now, according to the media, of course he's going to be labeled as that. According to the LAPD, of course he's going to be labeled as that. But, you know, if you read, I read his letter in its entirety. And,
right.
Like I said, I try to think about it from my point of view. You know, I've been, like even my career, your career, okay? Let's
right.
say if, you know, you saw something just done that was so wrong and to somebody else, you went and told, you know, your people at your job, you know, to say, hey, this is going on, this isn't right. And not only you get fired, you get blackballed. You can't get a job nowhere. And what you did your whole life.
But you don't kill people.
No,
that's,
I didn't say you kill people.
No. I know you're not saying that. I'm just saying to anybody listening that thinks, you know, he did the right thing. I mean, that to me, that's the bottom line.
Yeah,
and,
because if you think about it, that kind of almost like counteracts everything that he did. It's like he was trying to do something positive, but once he did that, that kind of just made everything he did kind of null and void.
Exactly.
Kind of takes away from that because he's always going to be labeled as instead of
absolutely.
Someone, you know, somebody to be admired. This is somebody who killed people, innocent
it's
people.
It's almost like it's almost like you know when you meet people that have been molested as kids. You know, obviously you're a victim, but as soon as you molest kids yourself, you can't backtrack and say, well, hey, it happened to me. You know, you don't get a pass once you've wronged others. You're not seen as a victim. You're seen as the antagonist. So I think that to me that's the biggest tragedy.
Okay,
and,
let's talk about that. Okay, he allegedly did this. It wasn't proven he did it, so I'm going to allege it. Now,
right.
the cops, they didn't give this man a chance to be proven guilty of killing anybody. That's his first
that's
and foremost.
Right.
They went in, they burnt the cabin down. There's proof out there that they did this. So,
Did you notice something? As I was watching Anderson Cooper, you know, they were doing it live. Notice they wouldn't show live footage. They were like, you know, we're just gonna show you pictures from earlier. Because I knew they were doing some corrupt stuff, and they were trying to kill that man, but they didn't want to put it on, you know, obviously on TV. So they kept showing these delayed pictures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see a wild car chase, they show that live, you know.
Exactly.
But for some reason, they didn't want to show you live footage.
Yeah,
I'm like,
not,
yeah,
it's not like,
I'm like,
not
yeah,
like
they
zeroed
man,
in on
they're going to do this man wrong. They're going to do him wrong.
Yeah, then they ordered to burn the house down. So how, what makes, like I said, actually what they did to get him cancels out anything they say he did and makes the message go even more than before.
I agree.
Now, if they would have captured him, arrested him, brought him in. And okay, that would have been different.
I agree.
But it's like them doing what they did made every word he said true.
I agree. I mean, damn, Ted Bundy killed 30-plus people. They didn't kill him.
No.
Right.
They didn't kill that guy that shot up that movie theater.
Absolutely.
Holmes, last name Holmes.
Absolutely.
He surrendered. Why they didn't shoot him? Look at all the people he killed.
But you see what I was saying earlier is he could have, if he'd have done this differently, he could have really uncovered the corruption. Now they get to sweep it under the rug again.
How could he done it differently? They killed him.
No, I'm saying if he didn't kill anybody, and maybe he'd have took all his issues, you know, up the ladder to the Senate, you know, and try, I don't know.
I personally don't think they want to hear him, because think about it. Every time we talk about something, it's sad. If we want to get something done, a lot of times, let's be keep it real, we have to go find a white man to do it for us. If you want to get something done sometime, you got to find a white man that's cool
right.
with you to do it for you. So they don't want to hear nothing that we got to say.
I mean, where, you know, I was thinking to myself, where's Al Sharpton now, you know?
Al Sharpton's not going to show up. Al Sharpton's not going to say nothing. Let me tell you something. They got so much brutality, police brutality, and corruption in the United States. Al Sharpton shouldn't even have time for CNN. Jesse James shouldn't have time for anything that he does, because there's so much going on and so many cases that's, you know, in the forefront, but they only want to show up when the TV cameras are there. Think about it. Nobody was talking about Trayvon Martin like people was on social media. Then all of a sudden, mainstream media finally got a hold of talking about Trayvon Martin. They finally got to talking about all that, and now here they come.
Right.
You know, and it's, you know, like I said, it's sad, because it's like, we just trying to, you know, everybody just trying to live their life. Everybody.
But it seems to me that you're sort of giving him a pass because he's black.
And no, correct, I'm not,
I mean,
giving
I
him a pass.
I may be wrong. That's kind of how I'm interpreting.
But I'm not giving him a pass because he's anything. The fact of the matter is I look at it like if it were me, and I know how the police get down. I know how they do. I mean, I put up
especially in LA.
You know, it's not just LA. It's other cities also. How they've done, how they've done not only just brothers, but I've said, like I said in my video today, they've done this to everybody, not just really black people.
Minorities, Hispanics too. I mean, period. Minorities.
Believe it or not, I've seen stories where, you know, in videos where they've done it to white people. So you can't
say
it's all just black folks. They've done it to everybody. You know, and they on this power kick. And, you know, as citizens, that we need to, you know, stand up against this sort of thing. I mean, there's a lot of people that supported that man, and they were not black people. I need to definitely put that out there. I've seen them.
I heard some today, but you know, it reminds me of OJ. I remember when OJ got acquitted, and you know, Chris Rock was talking about this in his stand up. People were celebrating when he got acquitted. I'm like, what the fuck do we win? I mean, this guy, you know, obviously he got acquitted of the murders, but. You know, he's not no hero. Let's not hail him up as a hero. So that's kind of what I'm saying about this brother here is it's a little bit different story. He wasn't just a murderer like that. But I think what his intentions were, he just didn't do it the right way. Frankly, I don't really know what I've done different other than trying to move it up the Senate. You know, obviously he felt like this is what it had to come to, man. So I just feel bad for everybody involved, you know.
Now, the one thing I noticed is that, like, why, you know, I didn't hear anything much from his mother. I mean, the cameras was over there by his mother.
Yeah.
See, obviously, his mother had somewhat feeling about it, or his sister, and he really felt estranged from his family at the time period. Like, he said something about, you know, they estranged him from his family. And, you know, I mean, that can have an effect on you as well.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Being estranged from your family.
Okay.
Yeah, because, like I said, if you read the letter, you'll see that. And in the other case, they'll be trying to get, you know, the parents to say something or whatever. And he did not, you know, and that's sad. I mean, this whole situation is just sad. Like I said, they had brought him in and let him tell his side, let him go to trial, have a jury of his peers. And you get what I'm saying? Then the police would have looked bad at the situation. It could have made him look like the bad guy.
Because
they went in and arrested him. Now, I'm going to say, if he came out shooting, they shot him, then fine. Okay, he shot at y'all. Y'all shot him, and y'all trying to arrest him. I ain't got nothing against that. But if you go in there and the tape clearly say, they said to burn it down.
Oh,
they
my said, goodness.
They said to burn it down. You didn't hear that.
I saw that on CNN today. Yeah.
No. Yeah, they said to burn it down multiple times, saying to burn it down. So I mean, how did you give this man a chance to even surrender? You didn't.
They'll get a week off without pay at the most, right?
I mean, so to me, everything the man said and everything he did, you made him right. You didn't make him sound out to be crazy. Because look how you killed him. Because they killed him. The judge didn't give him a death penalty. The jury didn't convict him.
But still, the rub is here that, you know, they can always say, hey, you know, he killed his innocent people. you know, maybe
it doesn't give the police a right. I don't care what they say he did. It does not give the police, if you kill anybody innocent, it does not give the police the right to kill you on the spot.
I agree.
You must be judged by a jury of your peers. That is your right.
That's your right.
I mean, if the police felt like they were in danger, they actually do have a right to kill someone. Well, I'm not going to, I don't, you know, depending on the situation, if you go, like, let's say if I just go out and shoot 10 people and I turn the gun on the police, of course they have the right to kill me on the spot. So,
right.
But that's not. But that's not what happened.
That's
situation.
Not the case. But I'm just saying that's
what they
had.
They did not try to get any communication to this man. They just wanted to bum rush in there and get him out of there. Like I said, he was held up.
I think they had an agenda, no doubt.
They had an agenda. The LAPD shot 3 innocent people, thinking it was him, and
right.
They were shooting to kill. They were so obviously you already know what they was on.
All those people are future millionaires, you know, but.
I've been following the news out there on KTLA, and they were saying that, the ladies, you know, truck they shot up, the one that was the Dodge Dakota, when the man had Nissan Titan, the 2 Hispanic ladies, they say, we're going to buy him a brand new truck. I'm like, yeah, but you shot him, and you're going to pay up the medical bill. So what? You shot him.
They're going to get millions of dollars.
Right, a 71-year-old woman got shot. And a 47-year-old woman. Come on,
which means they were gonna kill him regardless.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. They were gonna kill him regardless, not let him get his due process of law. Which is why
they didn't want the cameras. Okay. Yeah, you're making sense now. Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't defend him for anything, but when I read what he said, the LAPD has done and the way they killed him. It's like it makes him look like a martyr. It really does.
They perpetuated what he was saying. I mean, they did everything that he was saying.
Exactly.
It's so sad, man.
It's sad, but the thing is, you know, is that there's a lot of people that go through that in LA County. You know, male, female.
Right.
You know, I mean, like I said, I've been out there before. I mean, they look at you like you're just about to do something.
I've seen it too. Uh-huh.
Last time I've been out there, they had a California Highway Patrol was looking at me all crazy. I'm like, what are you looking at me like that for? Like you wanted to shoot me. I'm like, why are you looking at me like that?
Yeah, that happened to me too. I got pulled over in LA with my cousin. Dude, he's talking to me like I was nothing. I'm in my head. I'm like, dude, I make more money than you. Like, get the fuck away from me. You know, looking at me like I'm just some ordinary, thug. Dude, I don't even act like a thug or dress like one, but that's just how they are, man. And I just wish something could be different. But I don't think any light's gonna be really shed on the LA police. This will eventually fade away. As far as the corruption, and they'll just go back to normal, man. That's what I think.
You know, and
it's gonna take something else for. And I don't even know if that'll help. I mean, it's just LAPD and NYPD, man. They're just, you know, known for their over the top corruption. You know, Chicago's the same way. You know, this thing now that you know people aren't. If you get robbed in Chicago, the police won't even come out. I mean, come on, man. You know, it's just this world is just it's just falling apart morally. You know,
no. So like Ms. Gabrielle, let me ask you a question. If you had a son, you know, how would you feel if it was your son that was being, you know, harassed by the police, and you know you raised your son to be a good man, and you know he never caused any trouble. I mean, how would you respond to that?
I would be upset, but how much can I really do?
That's a good point.
That's how I feel, because it's like, you know, I can be upset all I want. I could even try to start some type of petition and do all kind of stuff, you know, make YouTube videos, try to raise some type of awareness. But the way that our society is that, you know, this if someone raises, you know, tries to raise awareness for some type of black issue, it'll get, you know, everybody will say something about it for like a month or so, and then after that they'll move on to the next thing. They'll start hip hop, and you know they'll pay attention to something else. You know, they'll completely forget about it. like, you know, poor Trayvon, I don't see anybody walking around with hoodies, you know, trying to, you know, in support of him anymore.
That's a good, you know, you brought up a good point. Like, why
that's
is
so
it as black people, you know, male and female, why is it that we do not, you know, fight for anything? I always thought about this. I said, you know, if this group that's around right now, being around this, during the civil rights movement, we still be having, we wouldn't have gotten nothing.
Oh, of course. We would still
give
be
up
sitting on fans. The back of the bus right now.
Yeah.
We would quit because everybody is kind of looking for someone to do the stuff for them, and that's something that I've noticed.
And then, you know,
No, but you know, too, you know, with black folks, you know, I work in corporate America, so, you know, you see it, man, is you know, we're so focused on trying to one-up each other, and there's not really any togetherness. I mean, you know, when I see black people at the executive level, you know, they hardly speak to each other. I mean, they're just kind of, if anything, trying to pull each other down somehow. It's just, that's just how we are. You know, we're not a together race, and it's evident. You know, it's evident in times like these. It's so sad. But
let's talk about black police officers for a minute. Now, have you noticed like I've seen some black police officers that's even black men. Okay, man, they'd be cool. Like I don't know what with you. Then you got some other man acting like Uncle Ruckus with a badge. You noticed that?
Well, in corporate America where. I work at a major bank, and you know, obviously the female to male ratio is probably 3 or 4 to 1 at least. Uncle Ruckus is usually the black woman, from what I see. You know, that happens with black men, but from my eyes, I see, you know, you see these black women, and they're just they're as they get their degrees and move up the corporate ladder. They're doing their best to distance themselves from anything African American. She's dark as hell and got blue contacts and you know, talks overly proper, you know what I'm talking about? Just you know, the further they move up, it's just they try and distance themselves. I've seen it with brothers too.
I've seen that. So Ms. Gabriella, so you think that happens a lot, you know, with some, I'm not going to say all, some of our sisters, even the ones in law enforcement as well?
I mean, I can't speak from the law enforcement perspective, but I can speak from...
it's still
from,
career.
You know, there's any type of office type or a middle management type thing, that's something that I have a little bit more experience with because I have a lot of... women in my family that come back and tell me all these stories about how it seems like every time a black woman gets some type of managerial position or she's in some type of position of power, she does anything to make everybody else's life miserable.
Absolutely.
We'll sit there and try to suck to the boss and you know who the boss is, you know. And I don't really want to get too racial, but then she'll try to do whatever she can to kind of be like the female version of Uncle Ruckus, and she'll sit there and try to start this, you know, the little drama with the office politics and
try to sabotage other black folks.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I see it all the time.
Okay,
we
know that goes on. So like I said, definitely want to make sure to stay on this little topic about the police. So, you know, like, let's say, like, you have a situation that Chris Dorner saw, like, a police officer. Now, I always had this question, like the black police officers, they know that this is going on, or not just black police officers, or any police officer of color, you know, is considered minority. They know this is going on. They probably even witnessed it going on. Now, why is it that nobody want to talk because they fear what happened to Chris Dorner, that they'll lose their career and get blackballed? Is that the reason why you think? Because, come on, not all the cops out here are beating everybody or killing people. I know that.
No.
I know that's not going on. I mean, they got some good police out here, and I want to put that out there, that's not out here doing these things. But at the same time, why the ones who aren't doing these things won't say anything either?
But, you know, the reason you pay car insurance, and you probably pay more than you should, isn't because most people are reckless, you know, but it's because, you know, 17-year-old males, they get into wrecks, right? I mean, that's why we have laws and insurance. It's because of the few, not the many, you know. So, I think you're right. I mean, one thing you notice is, you know, you like in corporate America, you know, you when something's coming down the pipe, when I hear about a policy change and people hate it, but people get so petrified, and it's all about cover your own ass. So, people aren't willing to stick their neck out, you know, for what they believe in. And it kind of stifles growth, you know. And understandably, it's hard, you know, when you feel like you might be blackballed or like you might lose your job or lose a way to make a living. Sometimes it's hard to speak out, and I understand that. But to me, if it's something of this magnitude, you know, you got to do something. Because you know, black officers in LAPD, the other black, they see it. Hispanic officers, Asian officers, they see what's going on. You know, but
yeah, that,
you know, I guess it's easier said than done. You know, I guess it's easier said than done. So,
but if no one, but this is my thing. But if nobody say anything, I don't think people should take it to the point that Chris Dorner took it to. It shouldn't have
to
that point. To say something. I mean, why somebody got to take it to an extreme level to, you know, expose something?
Right.
It shouldn't have to, you know, go that far. Nobody should have to be killed. Anything. And that's where it comes up to, you know, to the citizens of wherever, you know, place that this is going on, that speak up and say something. Like me personally, I think it's wrong for cops to be policing other cops. I think they need to be police by a third party, nowhere in their county or jurisdiction, and they're not cool with.
Oh, right. But who's gonna pay for that? That's the question.
We pay for everything else.
I agree.
They tell us, okay, we're creating this. You know, my thing is, why every police brutality case can't be brought up before a panel of citizens and let them look at the evidence and let them see if this police officer was in the right or he should be charged.
I agree. Right,
why
I agree.
Can't you do that? In every city. That way it's neutral, it's a third party. It's not nobody
right.
cool with, they're not the judge they cool with, not, you know, the sheriff they cool with. Just do it that
right.
way and that'll be fine. And if they find him guilty of it, well then they should go to court and get prosecuted for it.
Right. Right.
I mean, don't you agree with that, Ms. Gabriella?
Yes, I do agree. Unfortunately, it'll be hard to get people to actually go through with it.
Right.
But
why do you think it'd be hard for people to go through it?
Because just like the brother just said, like, it's easy to say, oh, well, why don't you do something? Why don't you do something? But when you're really in that situation, it's a lot harder to speak up. You know, it's easy on the outside looking in to say, why don't you come out and say exactly what's going on? The problem is that everybody is so scared of losing what they have that
absolutely.
No one wants to stick their neck out. Like, why
absolutely.
Would I... You know, I might see something wrong being done, but would I really want to risk being homeless for this? Would I really want to risk
absolutely.
Not being able to ever have another job?
And then you add to that, you know, obviously in the black culture, this whole thing about no snitching, you know, I'm not going to snitch. Yeah.
And that, you know, right there, that has crippled our neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Now I got to bring that up, because I'm going to tell you the difference. I grew up all my life in the black neighborhood, okay, born and raised. Until, you know, I had, you know, left. And I'm telling you, there's with the white neighborhood. The white neighborhood, they don't live by that code. I can tell you that right now. I mean, if they see somebody hanging out, they're going to say, they start talking to you and say, well, who is that person over there, like, standing
right.
there? Or they'll come out, if they see somebody, I never forget this, when I had my house in this other neighborhood, the brothers and sisters that were there in this neighborhood was your brothers and sisters who are what you call your progressive blacks. You know, those who, you know, hardworking, college educated, don't cause no problems, raising their kids, you know, just living right, okay? Well, you know, and I talked to them, you know, like his other brother and sister, they were teachers, and you had some that was in, you know, one was the police, and you just had all these different people. Well, they had this one guy circling around the neighborhood, and he was, and everybody say, like, well, what's going on with him? And I was talking to some of the other guys that was out there, and, you know, they, you know, went up to stop the guy and asked him, say, hey, are you looking for anybody? Because they kept saying, he kept circling and looking at kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was standing there, and I was paying attention. I mean, they were serious about that. And I'm like, and the guy left, too. And they say, hey, he just looks strange. What is he doing? But see, in our neighborhoods, right. We don't stop nobody. We don't question nobody. Like, who is that? Why are they out
here,
whatever. And even in this same neighborhood, they had a homeowner association, okay, and they had paid, you know, the sheriff's department to have an officer, you know, patrol out there every night. He had to be out there. That was part of your homeowner association fees.
Right.
You know, and that, you know, that's a big difference. We don't pay no cops to be out there patrolling.
Right.
Under contract.
Right. That's true.
I mean, so that, like I said, I just see, and then also they believe in trying to landscape their places to make it look nice.
Absolutely.
They, you know, like I said, it's a lot of things that they do that in our neighborhoods we do not do.
Yeah, but they most importantly, they stick together, man. That's.
Oh, yeah. Together. Everybody in the neighborhood didn't put, like, you know, don't put up with nothing. I mean, they see somebody hanging out, you better not commit no crimes or whatever, because they try to go out there and
that's
take
right.
care of themselves. They ain't gonna wait.
It's not an accident.
And they watch your house. Like you remember that deal in Pasadena with Joe Horn? I know you remember that when they were trying to break in the house. That's around this area, Pasadena, Texas. And he called 911 and said, hey, they're breaking in my neighbor's house. And it wasn't his house. It was his neighbor's house.
Joe Horn, did you play for the Saints?
No. The man, you know, it said he came in and he was like, hey, you know, they're trying to break in.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, he trying to break in, and he went and he tried to stop him, and they say, no, don't go. We got somebody coming. He said, oh, no, I got my gun. I see him coming out. I'm going to kill him.
Right.
Yeah, and he killed him.
He sure did.
He sure did.
I remember.
And you know, Quanell X came out and saying everything. And, you know, once Quanell X do, I understand why Quanell X does what he, you know, he do. But in that moment, those guys were in the wrong.
Right.
He was in the wrong. So,
right.
You know, with that said, you know, I mean, that's a difference. How many neighbors in the black neighborhood would go and try to stop somebody if they see somebody breaking in your house?
Under about 50 or 60 years old, none.
You know, you're like, well, I ain't got nothing to do with me. And they ain't
right. you find Aunt Jemima, you know, old grandmama that might do something. But other than that, nah, not happening in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Like Dave Chappelle. You know, was it Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock said? You know, black people they'll see you moving in your big screen. And then they'll come break in and be, and then when you ask them, they like, oh no, they'll tell you like, hey, I saw somebody break in your house. Like, it was you, nigga. That's just how we are. We just, you know, cutthroat. We don't stick together. Always the competition. You know, it's just how it is.
And so this is pretty much why this brutality with police is allowed to go on, because we don't really look out for each other. That's
nope.
pretty much what I think. And that's
absolutely.
Why there's so many things that keep happening. Because if we were all to come together and just say, look, you know, I'm tired of being harassed. I'm tired of having, you know, I don't know if you've seen that. There was a report on what kind of clothes that you should wear, some type of recommendations for what kind of clothes that black men should wear so that they won't
get
the police. Like, you can't wear, you know, a skull cap, and you shouldn't wear certain types of clothes and stuff like that. That doesn't even make any sense. But, you know, the majority of black people don't want to do anything about it, though. We'll get offended, we'll get upset, but we're not going to sit there and try to take a stand.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, like the men of old, your Malcolms, your Marcus Garvey, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, they would have, you know, saw something like this and said, man, that inspired us for a movement, you know? Like,
right.
It didn't even have to get that far. You know, Rosa Parks, what happened to her, even stirred stuff up with them. I mean, so it's like,
right.
You know, I think, in my opinion, we are the weakest we ever been, I think, as a people, because, you know, the biggest problem we have, we all want this 15 minutes of fame, and no matter how we get it, we want it. We, you know, like you said, we're on this competition deal, you know, it trying to, you know, being this, well, I got to one up, you know, another brother, I got to one up another sister, or, you know, I can't, you know, try to help each other out best way I can. Even if we don't agree, well, you know, hey, we don't agree, but we just try to keep it, you know, cool as possible. We're not trying to do that. We're not. I was shocked. We got together for the Trayvon thing. I was shocked. For that,
I agree.
I was shocked. I've never seen that before in my life, you know, that I've been living. We haven't had that.
The last time we had that any kind of unity like that was the Million Man March.
Yeah, the Million Man March. You're right.
But besides that, it just hasn't been.
I mean,
You're talking about stop and frisk.
What if all the black people get together and say, you know what, we sick of that because we are being targeted. And they go and they get out there and they won't stop talking about it. They talk about it in their area. They get in front of the city hall. Causing a public spectacle. Once them cameras start showing up, like anytime we do something, cameras show up. Trust me, it's how it goes. I guarantee you. And then they get, you know, brothers as lawyers and sisters as lawyers and bring these documented cases up and how, you know, all this is going on. I mean, do it through the law and also draw attention to it. Something could be done about stop and frisk. But our people don't want to do nothing about it. That's why
we're more worried about entertainment and spending money.
And that's the sickening thing about us as black people. We don't look at entertainment for what it is. It's entertainment.
Right.
That's it. We're so worried about if an entertainer is actually living what they're saying. We're worried about this entertainer is actually, you know, being the person that we think they should be. Instead of saying they are an entertainer. They just do that. That's how they collect their check and they go about their business.
Oh no, black folks live vicariously through celebrities,
and that's horrible. Like, you know, why would we even listen to anything Lil Wayne would say? Like, seriously, Lil Wayne, you know how many pills and syrup Lil Wayne and drunk, and you gonna pay attention to what he says? He's so screwed up in his head. Like, why would you be shocked at anything Lil Wayne says?
Right, absolutely.
I mean, this is the people we look up to, Lil Wayne. I mean, where's our you know, our leaders or who is the next leader? Because, you know, Jesse and Al, they old. I really don't expect them to fight like they used to. I really don't. Them men.
You got Cornell West. I mean, there's not many.
Well, yeah,
even if it doesn't have to be a ton of people to aspire to be like, the problem is that nobody wants to be like that. They'll look at somebody like Barack Obama and say, oh, he's a square. You know, he's boring. I've heard that.
Well, you know, the deal is too, but the black community, a lot of times, don't really encourage you to step forward either. Let's say, like, you say, you know what, I'm sick of this police brutality. I'm going to fight. I'm going to take a stand against this stuff. Okay? And a lot of times, black people be the one to take you out.
Absolutely. I've been there for years. I've been saying that for years. It's not white folks, okay? It's like I was watching a video of Alexis Tyler on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
She's like, white folks ain't never done me wrong. It's niggas.
I'm going to have to agree with her on that. And Alexis K. Tyler speaks the truth.
She's country as hell, but I love her. She's funny.
Man, shoot, she tells the truth. And yeah, that's the truth.
She does.
Like I said, every time you have something going on, it's going to be probably 9 times out of 10, some, you know, Uncle Ruckus trying to take you down, or Mammy or whoever. That's usually it's going to be. You know, I can't say that too. I can't say a bunch of racist white people trying to do me stuff or do this. No, I can't say that. That would be a lie.
That's right. She's talking about, she's done some speaking at some colleges, and white folks, they pay her, no problem. But when it's some black people involved, it's like, oh, we ain't got it. You know?
That's true. Actually, I was listening to Tariq Nasheed the other day, and he actually said something similar with one of his old shows, that it's like every single time, you know, a lot of people say, okay, we want you to come out and speak, but they don't want to pay. They're like, we brothers, you know. I've heard him say that. Because you want to help us out, and it's unfortunate.
Right.
Every black person I've ever heard has said the same thing about, you know, unfortunately, about our people. That way, when I do business with somebody, I tell them right up front how much you charge me for it, and, you know, because I'm going to pay. I don't ask for no hookups because, you know, I don't. Because I don't want to be known, because a lot of times we have a reputation of not wanting to pay and not wanting to, you know, be business minded, you know, also, and not be professional. So
yeah, have you noticed something? I've been to, you know, a couple of nice restaurants, and like a month ago I was at Papa Do's, which I don't know if you have that where you are, but it's a,
yes, I do.
It's a pretty nice seafood place, and it was this table that was next to me, and it was like four black people. They looked like New Orleans type black, you know, dreadlocks, and they had tattoos everywhere. But anyway, so the waitress was a black woman, and I pay attention, you know, to people that are sitting next to me, and one of the things I pay attention to is if they tip. Like, that's one of my big things. I've always been big on tipping, just how I was raised. And these folks were eating lobster and, you know, getting all these expensive drinks. And come to find out, their bill between four people was over $200. They gave a $4 tip. And
when everybody gonna go on the 20% thing? I mean, just some people not.
No.
But it doesn't
I
matter. That's irregardless.
But that's
and did all that work, and they only paid her
$4. That's a 2% tip. That's a 2% tip. And,
no, but
and you know,
the normal tip is 20. What is it? 20% normally?
No, 18. It's like 8. You know, 18%. Yeah, just depending on the service and everything. But you know, when you talk to waitresses and waiters. When black folks come in, they're afraid because they know they might not get paid. I mean, it's just I don't know what it is.
I'll tell you what it is. And when I was much younger, I'm saying maybe like 18, 19, I was one of those kind of black people. I admit that. I say, well, I got to tip them for what? I'm paying my bill. They pay them,
right.
You know. But then did you know
they're making $2.14?
Yeah, or I was explained that. At the time, until I was saying, listen, this person, you know, they are doing a service for you. And it doesn't, you know, it's like, it's just not tactful to have somebody do a service and you don't pay them. And so anybody who does like a service for me, you know, like my barber, always tipping, you know.
Always
tipping, you know, or like, say, a waitress, a waiter at a restaurant, I tip them, you know, because that's just, you know, the right thing to do. I mean, but like I said, some people just don't know either.
Yeah, but I mean, this in 2013. I mean, there's too much information. People should know. Let me ask you a question though. Let me ask you a question. For the most part, when black people screw over each other, do you think it's just that we're just trying to hold each other down? You know, just trying to hold each other back. What do you think is the black folks' kind of DNA of always trying to get the best deal, always just trying to negotiate, get over? And not that we're just trying to screw each other over, but we're just very, I don't know, we try to take advantage of situations, you know.
I mean, are you saying...
It's not really kind of... So basically what you're saying is it because we're opportunistic, not because...
Opportunistic, that's what I was looking for. Right.
Yeah, you're trying to take, you know, try to get the best thing that you can out of whatever situation. You're trying to, like, you know, it just seems like getting over, but... You don't want to spend all your money on a tip, or you don't want to do this, you don't want to do that. It might seem like you're trying to hurt the other person, but then you're also, it's because you're really only looking out for yourself, which is pretty selfish. But because of the way that we're programmed almost, that's the way that we
right.
have to be. A lot of people came from very humble beginnings. And
right.
if you come from that, your mindset is going to be that of, if I have something, I'm going to hold on to it as tight as I can, and I'm not going to try to help somebody out. Why should I? You know, I'm still trying to look out for myself.
Right, but that's not the attitude to have. You know,
but see that attitude right there, which is a common attitude in the black community. That's why we don't come up as a people, because I've sat here in the workforce, and I have watched people come through every
right.
single time, and. What they do, they help each other out. They get their son hired. They get their son.
Oh, right.
They get their
right.
daughters. They get all this other stuff. They help them get to where they're at.
Right.
Okay, even in law enforcement. You got the daddy, a detective. He get the son to be a police. he'll get, you know, his daughter to be work the desk at the police squad. He'd get all his family in there. That's why a lot of times you see a family of cops in one area. Because they get everybody involved. I mean, that's what...
We're not like that.
You know, I know white people do that. I really notice they do that. I've seen Mexicans do that a lot. I've seen Asians do it. I've seen Arabs do it. Everybody else do it except us. Us? Oh, no. We can't do that. We cannot help another brother or sister out at all because... And if we do help them out, we want to hold it over their head for the rest of
their life. Absolutely.
Oh, wait, wouldn't it's be like, for
the problem is that we're scared, though, because... The problem is, though, it's not because we're being selfish, but a lot of the times it's like I don't want to help somebody out because they might mess things up for me. Because I can't tell you how many times I've seen people try to bring their family into things. Well, in the black community, they'll be like, okay, well, I'm going to help you guys out. I'm going to, you know, put you on my job, and we're going to start a company together. Next thing you know, somebody's stealing money from the company. Somebody else is not doing their job. They're like, oh, well, we're family, so I shouldn't have to work as hard. And
well, there's always going to be that, right. But there's no excuse. If you have the means to help people that you have a good feeling is going to do the right thing, there's no excuse to not help out. I remember, I know Tommy is, Mr. Tommy is not a popular subject on the show. But one thing he said, which made me think, was he was talking about how these white actresses and actors adopt black kids. And he was like, you know, you see these black women, you know, like Halle Berry, like why don't successful black women that want kids, why don't they go adopt black kids? And I was like, And you know, I volunteer a lot for, you know, with my company. And I mean, you rarely see black folks. I mean, you see them sometimes, but especially like the, when they do the like little marathons, but black folks, we don't give, you know, we just take, we take, but we don't give back. So we got to do a better job at doing that. I really believe that, you know, no excuse, you know, I know a lot of us come from bad beginnings, but that's all the more reason to give back once you get to where you got to go. Cause you can't do it on your own.
Yeah, it's another thing I see, no matter what career, like say, as they talk law enforcement, even down to, singing or something, it don't matter. I do not see other groups of people trying to tear each other down. I don't see that.
It doesn't exist.
I don't see it. I mean, not if they doing it, I sure don't see it publicly. You know, like we make it a public spectacle to try to tear each other down. That's what we'll do.
And by the way, just like Ms. Gabriella was saying, remember, it's the whole MC Hammer story, right? MC Hammer lost over $30 million in 1 year, not from splurging on cars. I mean, he did a little bit of that. But guess what? All the people from his hood, he was trying to help everybody. Hey, man, I know you need help. I'm going to give you a job. You can come shine my shoes. I'll pay you a salary. He had over 100 people on his payroll, folks that he was close with. When he fell on his ass, everybody left except two people. So
exactly, yeah. But
it's
that Elijah Muhammad thing, though, too. It's like basically he wasn't teaching them how to fish. He wasn't.
That's not the point. If that was white folks, I guarantee you that wouldn't happen like that. Not to that degree.
No, because when white folks do it, they teach their kids and teach their family how to fish.
True.
In other words,
they say,
you know what, I'm going to bring you in here, I'm going to help you out, but I'm not doing it for you. I'm just
a
go-away for you to get in. I'm not going to work for you. You on your own.
That's true. Like Warren Buffett said, he's only leaving like 5% of his wealth to his kids. He said he don't want to leave all that money to his kids. They need to have their own identity. So, yeah, you're right. You're right about that.
Yeah. So, Ms. Gabriella,
let me ask you
a question here, Ms. Gabriella. So, man, you can elaborate on this. You know, like I say, along the line with the topic that we are talking about here. Ms. Gabriella, I'm laughing at that too. Anyway.
Wait, what I missed?
No, it's just something in the chat room. Anyway,
okay.
I'm laughing at something. Anyway, Ms. Gabriella, let me ask you a question also. I noticed that the competition, even, you know, with women is a lot worse. You know, like, say, it don't matter what field it's in. You know, so why the competition is so, you know, bad with the women?
I think it's just because women have this competitive nature. And even though we outnumber, I mean, that's actually the reason why. Because a lot of the problems that come out is because we women outnumber men, especially in black females, because...
Oh, yeah, that's bad, yeah.
You know, it's like by the time you reach the age of getting married, there's like a slim to none chance that you might never find anybody.
Right.
And there's a large percentage of black women that will never find a husband. And because of that,
there's
bitterness and resentment, and that kind of just makes the competition worse, because it's like, and sometimes it's not even the competition, it's just that someone is just so angry because it's like, I really want what this person has, but I know I'll never be able to get it. And so what am I going to do? I'll just make their life miserable so that, you know, at least I can feel better about myself. You know, it's unfortunate.
I've always heard that, and I've seen it true in my life that, you know, I get looked at more and I get more offers, so to speak, when I'm in a relationship than when I'm single. Do you think that's what it stems from, is the competitive nature, you know, just women just trying to cut each other's throats?
Yeah, it's that, and it's like, well, obviously he's treating this girl right, so let me try to take what she has so he can treat me right, kind of thing. Like, the woman really wants to be with somebody who's going to treat her well, and so even though she might have to end up ruining somebody else's relationship,
all right,
do it so that she can get what she wants.
All right, like I say, well, I got a caller that they want to come in and just finish, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, he's want to, you know, chime in some experiences with police brutality. Let me see, I can get him on the line. Mr. Kids Mac, what's up, man?
Yeah, what's new? Now, what you talking about, police brutality, or you talking about relationships?
We talking about it all.
Okay, all right.
But bring it
so
back
what's
in.
New?
Huh? What's new? I ain't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I've been working. You know, gotta make that money. So
that's right.
I mean, I've been seeing your videos. I see you and you and what's the face be going at it now. Well, you know, dude calling you swole fat. I'm like, what the hell is this? But I don't know. I don't get it. I see the videos, but I don't really get involved with that. But I check out your videos and see what you be having. But basically, I've been working, so. That's it.
Oh yeah, well shoot, man, you got to make your money, and that's, you know, that's what I do also. I got a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, and so you definitely got to, you know, definitely got to make your money. But
what's going on down there in H Town?
Shoot, man, what's going on down here? It's man, it's warm. It's warm this time of year as always, and you know, like I said, we're just trying to just hustle and grind. That's it, man. That's all I'm doing down here.
So what's your problems? Have you ever had any issues with police? Popo?
Me?
Yeah.
The times I've been stopped by the police, I'm going to say the worst time I've been messed with by the police was, I'm going to say, Department of Public Safety. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of times they have an attitude. You know the ones in Texas that had a big cowboy hat?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. They walk up. Yeah, that's part of the uniform, the big beige cowboy hat when they come up to your car.
You talking about the troopers?
Yeah, the state troopers. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this: I know Houston is very racist, isn't it? Are they bold with their racism, or are they overt or covert?
I can't. Let me tell you. It depends on where you go. It depends on where you go.
I can answer that. My brother, I'm in Dallas, and he's in Houston. So, you know, I've seen both cities. I'm from Chicago, though.
You from all
the
over?
Here's the difference. Down south, racism is a lot more passive aggressive. So the racism doesn't always jump out, you know, unless you live in like Mississippi or the backwoods somewhere. A lot of the racism here is not just it may not be obvious to the naked eye. But
it's
you know what
stuff that goes on here a lot, I noticed.
Right. But
you gotta pick up on words they say to you.
Right. For instance, one thing I hate, you see this a lot in Dallas, is you see white folks, white collar white folks, and they see a black person, and they immediately start to break out in that slang lingo. What's up, my brother? You know, all that. I can't stand that patronizing stuff.
Yeah.
Now, what's up, homie?
You talking about the poor working class whites? They start talking what they like. They try to relate to you.
Yeah. But the way they do it, it's so disrespectful. You know,
Are they doing it like they're trying to make fun of you, or are they doing it because they think that's how you are? I mean, I think it's a bit of both.
I really do.
You know, I really don't have that problem though, because like I guess my demeanor, you know, I guess my demeanor that comes across, like they don't really mess with me, like, and I call a hand on it too though. Like if somebody comes to me and say, "Oh, what's up, my brother?" I'm like, "I'm not your brother. Why are you calling me that?"
Right.
You know,
right.
And I draw attention to it the moment they say it, so they know, okay, I can't mess with him.
But most black folks don't do that. We be like, "What's up?"
So what if a Hispanic call you his brother?
I really don't take it like that because it depends on what you're saying. Like I know racism when I see it, no matter where it comes from. I know it when I see it.
You've actually been getting kind of bold on this, because I was watching your video about Chris, and I even said this before, and now it's kind of like now that you've read his manifesto about the racist Hispanic cops, and you're beginning to see that a lot of them Hispanics just hold just as much racism against.
Man, I know that. You ain't telling me something I don't know. You know, that's the thing. You're not telling me something I don't know. There's racism everywhere, and like even like my wife even tell you that. She says Mexicans are the most racist than anybody because they're so close-minded and want to stay by themselves. That's why.
See, when you say Hispanic, see, I guess I'm from a different region from you. It's not just Mexicans, but in my city, it's like Dominicans, Puerto Ricans.
Well, see, I don't have all that. Mostly down
here.
Where
you at?
In Boston.
Oh, yeah, that's why. Yeah, down here you see Mexicans.
Yeah, down here.
You see Mexicans down here.
Well, like, I'm going to say the newer, most of your later generation, second, third generation, you know, Mexicans is here. They're Americanized like anybody else, but it's like some of your older ones. You know, that comes from Mexico. They still have the same Mexican traditions and stuff like that. They like to stay within their culture, and they really don't like to intermingle with nobody. I mean, I never once said that Mexicans can't be racist. I never said that.
I don't know, because you were in some of your old videos, you talk about, I think something about, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly, but you was in support of them for something, I forget.
I said I said the ones who are racist or have been racist, or whatever, I don't fool with them. The ones that's cool with me, I'll be cool with. That's it. That goes for anybody. If you're cool with me, I'm cool with you.
Okay,
that's fierce.
I understand that.
Like I say, I'm not gonna go to war with. I'm not gonna have something against somebody that ain't done me nothing. Period. Okay. I don't care who you are. Why would I make an enemy? Put like this. I'm talking about racism with the cops and racism with this, racism that. If I do the same thing, how is that gonna make me better?
Right.
That's how I look at it. That's me. Like big example. When I first went on my job, man, you know, like, it was a dude, me and him still cool to this day, right now. Me and him know each other's kids, wives, everything. And he's Mexican. He looked out for me so many times. He told me, like, man, watch yourself, or this dude here going to try to get you, or watch these white folks and stuff like that. It's a lot of Mexican dudes that's like that. Not all of them are bad. Man, some of them are. You get what I'm saying? So I've had experience to see the difference. Like, it's just like the same things that, like, you say maybe racist people and say maybe white do. They all do is all the same thing. The looks they give you, the gestures, the vibe, it's all the same. I mean, like, they got it, like, people going to them Arabian stores. Some of them don't like black folks. You know what I'm saying?
Most of them.
Get them Arabs. Yeah, they don't like black folks. They look at me funny, I don't even shop in their store. I walk right out.
Yeah, don't. I mean, but you know what? But see, you're a rare breed because black people will, I mean, black folks will. People don't even respect them, and blacks are still spending money. Like, I went to Philly, and I went into a store. It was a restaurant, and money was in a, you know how they have the donation tip? At the counter of, like, in a restaurant, and they have, like, a donation cup. Now, he was an Indian guy, East Indian. And it's like he snatched it. He snatched it, arrogantly snatched the cup off the table, like saying, "You're going to steal the money. You know, I haven't still no interest. I don't steal." But I walked up out of there because, and I'm looking at all these other black folks in there just giving them his money. That's why I don't, this is what
I'm
saying.
You're not going to disrespect me. Like, I don't have to spend my money at your establishment. It's like, if I walk in the store, and I've done it before, and they looking at me all funny, and just keep looking at me, I turn right around and walk out and go. I'll go down the street to somewhere else because, you know, you're not going to sit there and look at me funny like I'm a steal. So I'm going to say, dude, I work every single day. I got money to spend here. Period. You ain't got to get them people your money. And you're right. A lot of black folks are still shop there, even though, like, let's talk about women for a minute. You know, Miss Gabrielle, I'll jump you in this. Why is it that these women will go in and to buy weed and these are Asians and follow them around? Why is that?
Oh, that's something that I find really funny, because I'm just like you. If I'm being disrespected, even if I have a whole cart full of stuff, I'll put everything back and leave the store, because I'm not going to tolerate being treated like that. But some women they'll just put up with it. They're like, well, I don't care if they're being racist against me, especially when you go to these nail salons. Like, I don't want to be talking about these racial things, but sometimes there will be people who will... You know, sometimes you can tell if they're kind of making fun of you in a different language, but, and then they'll be like, oh, no, I wasn't making fun of you, I just said that you look really pretty, you know, and they'll sit there, they don't know that they're being insulted, but they'll just sit there and say, oh, well, as long as she does the job good, I don't care.
You know,
we'll spend money with other people before we spend in our own businesses.
That's what I'm saying, like, how much did they say black women make the Koreans, what, $1 billion? They said
black women they only make up 8% of the population, but they buy they spend around 80% of all hair products. In the country on black women.
They make the Koreans billions of dollars, right? People who don't even respect them. Now you can take that billion of dollars, you create your own black hair salon, and you know hire your own people, and you can serve your own people. Why would you want to give it to them? They're just taking that money and bringing it to their own people. I don't understand.
Right.
And even when you go to nail salon, they hire their own kind. They don't even hire no blacks. They open up a nail salon or a Chinese restaurant, and your neighbor would sell you that poison. Make up all that money. You can take that money. You create your own job. But, like, if you come to Boston, right, you go in a black neighborhood like
Guys, hey, give me a second. I got a call from a man who said he's a retired Illinois State Police. So let me bring him in. He said he wants to take a stand for the police for a minute. How you doing, sir?
Good evening, sir. How are you? I'm well, thank you.
Okay, and how long were you on the Illinois State Police?
28 years.
28 years. Okay. Yes. And so let me ask you a question. Did you ever see anybody in your 28 years on the force do anything you consider brutality?
Yes, sir, I did.
And did you report it?
Yes, I did.
And what happened due to your reporting?
Frankly, it didn't go much of anywhere. But I'd like you to know, though, the guy they did it on, first of all, I worked in the Chicago, Cook County area mainly. And I was returning from refueling my squad car on 35th and Shields, which is right near Comiskey Park. And I was almost run into a viaduct by a guy driving a van. And so, you know, I turned around to give pursuit, got on the expressway at 35th Street, drove all the way out past Dalton, past Riverside, Illinois, high-speed pursuit. I called for assistance on the Illinois State Police Emergency Radio Network. The Chicago cops responded to give me assistance. We got the guy on a rolling roadblock, got him off the road. Chicago cops went in there, pulled him out of the van, still strapped in the seat. Ripped the seat out of the floor. I don't know how they did that, but ripped him the seat out of the floor in the van, threw it on the side of the road, started kicking and stomping him, saying, "Don't run from the police, you stupid!" Boop, boop. You know, and he was whacking him. And me and my partner got to looking, just saying, "They're gonna kill this guy." And we managed to get him away from him, put him in our car, take him back. Now I wrote up the whole thing just the way I saw it, and nothing ever came of it. I sent it through channels. I figured that was my duty. That was my job. But I'm going to tell you, the guy they beat up was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, fair-skinned white man.
Mm-hmm.
and no missing it. And they beat him because he ran from the police. That doesn't make it right. It was wrong. However, he wasn't black. He was white.
Yeah, and if you listen to the
you couldn't mistake him even in the dark. You couldn't mistake him for anything
my
but
show,
a white man.
If you listen to the beginning of my show, I did say that they're beating up everybody. They're doing it to everybody.
I understand it. Because a lot of people say that, well, they wouldn't beat white people like that. That's just not true. Well,
that's a lie. I know that. I've seen videos of how they beat them up.
All right, but I want to say this. Look, I'm a constitutionalist. That's what I believe in the United States Constitution. I'm a Declaration of Independence constitutionalist. And if, I believe in what Thomas Jefferson said, that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. The police are agents of the government. Police departments are government agencies. They must be monitored for proper conduct all the time, around the clock, in every single thing that they do because of the authority that's invested in them that, if not checked when it's improper, can lead to tyranny. And I'm talking about any agency of the government. I don't care which one you're talking about. Mm-hmm. However, I'm going to say this. I know my comrades in arms and colleagues in the police department, what they did, the things they had to endure, the things I had to endure, the things I saw. And believe me, if you're going to look at the aggregate of what the police do, I think they do a damn fine job under damn near all circumstances. They do put their lives on the line every day.
Well,
every
and
day.
I also said, too, in the show, that I know it's not all bad police out there, and I also say there are some that do, you know, a good job and love what they do and follow the law. I did say that. But when you're talking about people like LAPD, who has a known reputation of, you know, you can't, you know, refute the stories of people telling you, listen, they picked me up. They dropped me in a neighborhood with a bunch of gang members that possibly do me something. And what is the reasoning for that?
Okay, again, before, you know, one thing I learned as a police officer, I got to see both sides before I make up my mind about anything. Everybody lies. Everybody lies. It ain't just the police. I got news for you. The one thing I had to get used to as a cop was getting lied to by everybody. I'm talking about relatives of the accused, the people I arrested, people who, you know, you stop for a traffic ticket. You know, everybody lies. So I got to see both sides so I make my mind. I don't care what it is. I want
to
hear what
the
people they're accusing say and what the people say. And then I will put my best judgment experience and an examination of the objective corroborating evidence or lack of it to make a determination. So when people say they were dropped off by the police in the neighborhood, they may or may not have been. I don't know. I got to hear both sides. I'm sorry. Everybody lied. That police lie. Suspects lie. Everybody lies. And one thing
you
better count on
lie.
Is hearing both sides.
I'm glad you say police lie, because a lot of times
they do lie. Yeah, they do
lie.
Okay, that's the point. Look, police officers are human. They are subject to the same laws as anybody. That's why. But because they are government, they probably need to be subjected to more scrutiny than anybody else because of the potential for tyranny. So therefore, police, yeah, when they say things, they need to be subjected to all the scrutiny available. But please. Please never ask me in particular to believe anybody who says they got a story about a beef about the police unless I can see both sides and see what the evidence is for or against everybody. Because I know everybody lies. Everybody lies.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to get, what I really want to get across here, though, is that, you know, it was like with Rodney King. You know, Rodney King would just help us an unremitted story of police brutality with no extenuating circumstance. The only thing there is no about Rodney King is the police were brutal and beat him for no reason. That just isn't true either. Any more than the cops were perfect in everything they did with handling him. This is, you know, like shades of gray is what's going on with most things, particularly today. I wouldn't have said
on,
this 50
on,
years
sir.
Ago,
sir,
but today
sir.
I'll say it.
Sir, hold on. Now, let's talk about Rodney King. Now, I understand he ran from him. They got him down. He needs to be arrested. I get that. I personally get it. But all that beating, they didn't have to do that. It was four of them there. I'm sorry. I cannot go along with that.
Sir, if you look at the use of force continuum that was in existence at the time the incident occurred, and in accordance with the laws of the state of California, was attested to by numerous witnesses, and then showing what the continuum, use of force continuum in Los Angeles was at the time, it was within the parameters of use of force of LAPD. They didn't hit him in the head. They were hitting him on the knees, on the shoulders, on the hips, intended to disable him. You don't see any of those blows striking him in the head. There
were
tended to be disabling
blows.
He had repeatedly attempted to get up. He had already tossed the officers off him. The guy, Stacy Kuhn, who instructed the police academy on how to identify offenders who are high on PCP, testified, even though he wasn't tested for it, you have to give a specific test for this. He said he exhibited all the characteristics of someone who was high on PCP. I frankly believe he was. And even though they did test him for alcohol, his alcohol blood levels, they didn't test him for PCP. And I believe he was. Not only that, he'd been pumped up from working out in the joint, 250-some pounds. I've dealt with people like him. And yeah, at the time I was on the force, I was 6 feet tall, 220 pounds, and I could bench press 400 pounds. And I'm telling you, working with people who are on PCP, you could have trouble with somebody who's 150 pounds. So I understand where those cops were. I understand what they were going through.
So the question I
and
have...
And they didn't show the first part of the tape that showed him knocking the cops down.
Okay, but the deal is, if it's me and three other people, I got one guy down. The four of us could put handcuffs on a guy and put him in the car. I don't think I need to beat somebody senseless between the four of us.
Maybe they didn't beat him senseless. They were trying to disable him so he couldn't get back.
Oh, he
Look
was disabled. Oh, I agree. He was disabled, all right. He was in I seen the pictures. I remember the L.A. riots. I was definitely saw all this growing up. And that man got beat in his face. He wasn't just his body. If it was his body, he would have had all of that.
No, you
face.
Don't see one blow to his head on the tape. Now, they said
how would he have blows
they
on his
face? They said when he
face.
Went down, when he was knocked down, he hit his face on his face. But on the tape, you don't see one blow to his head. Not one. Not one.
So
I defy you to show me on any of those tapes where they were hitting him in the head. I defy you to. You cannot.
Oh, I don't know how he had the stuff on his face.
That was separate.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that was, in your opinion, your professional opinion, do you think that all that was justified?
All right, were the other two suspects harmed in any way, shape, form, or fashion? No, because they complied. There were two other suspects that were arrested. They were not struck once. Only him, because he resisted arrest.
When a person resists their arrest, anything could happen to him. Correct?
No, you have to be within the use of force guidelines for your state. Whatever the law is on use of force by a peace officer, you got to be in compliance with it. I do not see anywhere where they were in substantive discordance with the laws of the state of California. Now, the Justice Department brought that case against them, Stacy Kuhn, Wind, and I forget Brisnos, and got them convicted in a court that was amenable to convicting them based on something I don't recognize in the law.
So So you're telling me that all that beating they did to him, I mean, in the amount of time they beat him, that was within the legal limit of the state of California at that time.
All now, right.
Yes or no question, sir. Yes or no. You're saying that all that beating they did within the lines of California law at that time and everything they done was right.
Sir, I'm going to concede one thing to you. There may be some dispute about the last 15 seconds. Not true. You may have a case to say that, you know, 15 seconds may have been a bit overboard or may have been overboard completely. Fine, whatever. But to say that amounts to a conspiracy to deprive him of his civil rights, I just don't buy.
That didn't come across my
No, that
my
was what they were convicted of, sir.
Well,
in federal
them,
court, that's what they them, were convicted
this,
of.
This is my radio show, and I'm saying is, I'm talking about police brutality. What they did in the court of law, I'm not even talking about that case. I'm saying you said that they went, basically you said they went overboard. Whatever I mean, in a second, you say they went overboard.
About 15.
But they did it. Well, 15, yeah. 5, whatever, it'll feel like a lifetime if it was, you know.
I understand that, but what were they convicted of, sir? Conspiracy to violate his civil rights. Conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't see how 15 seconds where you're talking about something that's marginal and borderline amounts to a conspiracy. I'm sorry, I just can't buy it.
I'm telling you how everything sounded to the listeners. I'm reading the court, the chat room. And to my listeners, they're taking it like you're justifying what they did.
Again, the charge was conspiracy.
No.
Not
the charge. I'm talking about what you're saying. Not the charge.
I said there's dispute about the last 15 seconds.
Okay.
So
what you're saying, I'm trying to clear things up so you can, so my listeners, I'm reading what they're saying, because they keep saying that you justifying it and everything else. No, I'm just trying to clear it up so they can know you're saying you're not justifying the beating of Rodney King. You're just saying that they were in some compliance with the law of reasonable force back at that time period, but at a certain point they went overboard.
Possibly, yes, possibly.
Well, no,
I'm not against that sort of argument, but to say that a minor conspiracy against the civil rights, ain't no way I'm going to ever go with that. Maybe disciplinary action or civil action, okay, but a federal criminal case is no way I'm going with that. No way under this God's green earth am I going with that.
And you like to say that is your right. You can believe that, and like everybody else, you know, have they right to believe, you know, what they believe. And
I mean, I could, you know, look, police work is kind of like making sausages. Nobody wants to see how it gets done, but everybody wants to eat the sausage. Everybody wants peace in their community. They want the peace, a civil society with peace in the community. They don't want to see what the cops got to go through in order to maintain that. They really don't. I mean, I could tell you stories about what I had to go through. I had one guy one day was beating his wife in a gas station. He was beating his wife, just beating the mess out of her. My wife just slapping her up and down. I'm in a squad car in uniform with a Smokey the Bear hat on. I get out. I tell him, step away from the woman. You know what he told me? He told me, you man, this ain't none of your business. Now, this guy, you ever seen a junkyard dog in the World Wrestling Federation?
Yeah, I remember him.
That's just what he looked like. He was that guy's size, or if not bigger, and that's just what he looked like. And then I said, okay, you're under arrest. And he put his hands up and he came at me. Now, look, I'm decent sized. Like I said, I'm 6 feet, 220 pounds. But this guy had at least 50, 60, 70 pounds on me.
Well, let me ask you
three inches in height.
I'm glad you brought that up. About
and I'm going to tell you, he came at me with his hands up, and I took out Mr. Baton, and I'm smacking him as hard as I can everywhere I can. I'm dancing around him. I'm whacking him with the baton as hard as I can hit him. It ain't making no impression. And I can hit pretty hard. I could really hit hard then. He wasn't making an impression on him. He's steady coming at me. I'm steady whacking at him on my portable, calling 10-1, officer needs help. Now, mm-hmm. I kept doing it because I was pretty fast, and I could keep whacking around him, dancing him, until I got back up, and we managed to get him down. You don't have no idea how many we had to hit this guy. If they had cameras rolling on us, they could accuse us of anything.
Okay, let me ask you a question. You keep mentioning a person's size. Are policemen intimidated by the size of a man?
Well, I think you would be, and yes, they are, frankly. In fact, in the use of force continuum has taught in the state of Illinois, one of the factors to be considered determining how much force you're allowed to use on someone is their apparent physical ability and size. It is one of the things you're supposed to weigh when you determine what level of force you're supposed to use to arrest a resisting suspect.
Okay. Well, you know what? Like I said, I appreciate your time on the show, and I thank you for sharing that information.
Well, you see, but like I said, a lot of people just don't like the cop. They don't like what they have to do. You know, they don't want them to do what they have, particularly if it's somebody. Look, we got relatives out there. We know we got a problem in the black community with lawlessness. And yes, it is at this time in 2013, frankly, it is worse than in other communities. I hate to say that, but it is. It is. I mean, look at homicide. We're 12% of the population, 48% of the homicide statistics, and 96% of them are murdered by other black people. Now, how can you possibly not say we don't have a problem disproportionate to others? You know we do.
Ms. Gabriella, still 857, you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay. Okay, now I had in that call because that call was going somewhere that I did not want to argue with and something that was disputable. Kid Mac, you there?
Yeah, I was listening to him. He had a mouthful.
Yeah, I had to get that call off because, you know, I said, okay, when you start saying that who makes all statistics? We don't make the statistics. You know, I mean, and how is it we 12% of the population, okay, and yet all the crimes are done by us? We don't have the numbers.
Yeah, that's
not Couldn't we argue that?
I was going to say everybody else, it's made to seem like all the crime comes from us, which is not true. What about these other groups? You have whites, you have Hispanics, you have Asians.
Exactly.
You mean to tell me they don't do crimes either?
But I want y'all to understand.
Hispanics do crime. Hispanics, like, they do a lot of crime to each other, especially, like, say, here in Texas, the cartels coming over here and bothering, you know, people and all kind of stuff that go on. You know, it's not just everybody do crime in this nation, but only our stuff get pointed out.
I want y'all to understand something. If you ask a cop that was a cop for 20 plus years, he's not going to be objective. You know, I was listening to him. He was so obviously. He was very smart, a very educated man.
Yeah, I can tell you that. I'm not taking another guess.
Yeah, no.
I'm not.
He wasn't being objective.
My thing is, like, this bothered me is that by the fact about, you know, I had to get him to admit that those L.A. cops did go overboard beating the dude. It's four of y'all. It's four.
Absolutely.
You mean, four out of four men. You can't subdue one guy. Okay, let's say if he is high on PCP, understand you like Superman on that stuff, like you were saying. I get that not too many people want to be a police officer. I get that's not an easy job either. I get that because you got to go deal with the woman beaters and everything else, gang members. I get all that. You get what I'm saying?
He would not have got millions of dollars if other people didn't agree. He got millions. So obviously something was wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. Now, Ms. Gabrielle, all that stuff you was hearing, that exchange, what's your opinion of that?
My opinion was that he may have been a little biased, but my mom actually used to work for the police force, and she's actually seen someone who was on PCP, and they had to shoot him 16 times before he went down. So I'm kind of having a hard time with this, you know, with what the guy said, because, you know, there's no way that you can justify what happened with Rodney King at all. I was actually a criminal justice major at one point, so we had to study that case. I thought it was excessive use of force. So everything that they did was unnecessary. You didn't have to take it to that extreme. You almost killed the man, you know. But, you know, when you're in that situation, the adrenaline is running. It's kind of hard to stop yourself if you're scared and you're thinking, you know. And you feel threatened, that's just a natural reaction to want to lash out on someone. It's not right, but it happens.
I don't know, man. That was a black person that called you, right? That guy, he's a black cop?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. He kind of sound like he could be one. You know, that's why I was curious, but I don't know. He is biased.
All right. I got a call. I just check. Mr. Delano, what's going on?
Yeah. Y'all remember that case or that guy in L.A. I think it was a couple of years ago. Kelly Thomas, where he was a homeless guy and
Officers.
Yeah, the two police officers just beat him to death. I mean, you could see like they didn't know there was cameras at the gas station they were at. So they took the cameras from the gas station, and I guess someone was actually recording with the cell phone too. So they took the audio from the cell phone, and then they combined it with the video from the gas station, and they put it together, and you could see everything that happened. And it was terrible. They just, he was pleading for his life, and they just beat him to death. I don't know if y'all remember that one or not, but
I remember it. I mean, I don't remember it well, but I remember hearing about it in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I remember that because I listened to like. The radio stations out there. I don't live in California, but I listen to the radio stations out there. And they used to always talk about it. But they beat him to death. They got photos of him over his face. You can't even tell who he is, and it's all blue and black. And
well, that's the reason you're gonna produce more. What's his name? Lavelle Mixons. You're gonna produce more. Lavelle Mixons. You're gonna produce more Maurice Clemens. You're gonna produce more Chris Droners. That's the reason, because of stuff like that.
Okay. Well, let me get a person in online. They got a question about Chris Dorner. Hey, Brother Myron, you're on the show, brother. Now, what you were saying about Chris Dorner?
Yeah, brother. My question was this. I wanted to know, they really don't have any physical proof as of this moment that either that was Dorner's body or not that was in that cabin. But even if it is, okay, my question is this. And that officer, I wish he was on, you know, your show, the retired officer, because I want to ask him this question. What justification was used for them to automatically to make up in their minds that they wanted to burn that cabin down? I mean, really. I mean, you didn't see no fire trucks, nothing, none of that, okay? And then they want to turn right around and say, well, we couldn't really search the house out because the house was too hot. Well, okay, where are the fire trucks? And what justification was made for them to burn that cabin down, knowing that they had this one suspect in them? That's my question.
I know justification they had. He know too much. We need to kill it.
Exactly.
That's a justification.
Right. Now, I want any officer to answer that. You see what I'm saying? What is it that they have to say to that? This man knew everything what was going on in that police department, brother. Everything. I mean, even going all the way back to Rodney King, okay? And they wanted him dead, period. Mm-hmm. You know what, just like Waco, and you know what, brother, you know what this reminds me of? I don't know if any of your listeners or even yourself, brother, and the sister that's on with you right now. Do y'all remember the movie The Negotiator with Samuel Jackson?
Yeah.
You know what? That movie has similarity to this case right here. Samuel Jackson, he played that part in that movie. He knew a lot what was going on at the police department, and he was going to expose the corruption in that police department, and they wanted to do it. And it's just like deja vu, brother.
Yeah. Like, I knew he was going to kill him, like I was saying earlier in the show. When they shot at them three people like that at their car, they were shooting to kill. Look at where the bullets was hitting at. If you look at the car.
Absolutely. I've seen it.
And that don't make any sense.
I got a suggestion. Like, here's what I do in my car. I have four cameras. Like, they're always on. They're always recording. Like, I have two that you can see in the front and the back. And I have two that are hidden, so, you know, it records all the sound. So just in case anything happens, you know, all my family knows, you know, I have cameras in there. So something seriously happens to me or, you know, whoever's driving my car, they know that, you know, they can always, you know, go into my car and find the cameras. Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, you know, it's crazy. I ain't got pulled over too many times for nothing. Like,
Now what area do you live in, Delano?
I live in Arizona.
Arizona, and they message you a lot over there?
Yeah, what? Like, especially like when I used to drive through the reservations and stuff, they would pull me over for nothing, you know, like, oh, you're driving too fast. No, I'm driving a speed limit. You know, no, you're 5 miles over. And I asked him if they're detaining me, and he was like, I'm more free to go, and they just let me go. See, they don't want to mess with me. But
yeah, I remember a guy some years ago that he equipped all his car and his trunk full of cameras because he was tired of cops, and the cops was he knew somebody. The cops had planted some dope in the car, and it trumped the dude up on some charges on dope, and the dude didn't have no dope like that.
Well, yeah, he put the cameras.
Yeah, you got to put cameras everywhere.
They're cheap, you know. You can get them for $20 on Amazon. Mine are a little bit more expensive, but you know, I think everybody should have at least one. Just even for accidents.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get in a car accident, you always have proof. But that's just a suggestion.
And those police, they don't like cameras. They can't stand us with them cameras. Ooh, they hate them cameras. They're trying to pass all kind of laws that outlaw us recording them. Now, why is that? What's wrong with us recording them?
They don't want people to see what they're doing.
Like a check and balance. They don't. On the internet. So you can call the police and have it on Facebook in a matter of minutes.
Yep.
Brother.
Go on.
Brother, I want to ask you this, brother. You know that same officer, the retired officer, you know, that called in? I was hoping that you really would ask him this, brother. Even if he was on, I would ask him this also. What is the limit of excessive force? I mean, really. I mean, I was listening to him. That, what was used on Rodney King, that was excessive force, bro. It's as if they wanted to really, literally disable this man, okay? You know, really, that is my question. What is the limit?
What is the limit on excessive force? What is the limit on excessive force? We don't know that. Hold on, area code 770, what's your name?
Yeah, you call me Sarge. I'm back again. I was speaking early too. By the way, I am a black man.
Hold on.
I am a black man.
Hold on. What question you going to ask him about excessive force?
Officer, I want to ask you this, sir. What is the limits of excessive force?
Okay, sir. What I can explain to you is the use of force by a peace officer in making an arrest or an apprehension. I can explain that to you thoroughly, and then you can either accept it or reject it as you will.
Okay.
But there is a continuum. It's called a continuum. All police officers in the police academy are instructed in this continuum, and they break it down like this. The levels of force available to a peace officer are, number one, presence, meaning your presence tends to quell certain things, like people tend not to do certain things when a uniformed police officer is in the area. That's one level of force, just the fact that you're there as a uniformed police officer with a badge, baton, and a gun. Second is commands, to give commands, verbal instructions, verbal orders. Okay? Now, after this, we get to the levels where there's a level of force involved. For instance, you're giving instructions to an individual, and he's refusing to comply. Tell him you have to move on, or you have to leave these people's premises because they asked you to leave. And they say, I'm not going anywhere. I got a right to stay here. And the owner or whoever's willing to sign a complaint for trespass, and you tell them, okay, now you're under arrest for trespass. Now, you can give the guy a command, tell him to get up out of the chair, come with me to the patrol car. If they don't comply, you then can use what is known as a pain compliance technique. You can put, like, pressure on, say, the external mastoid process under the jaw or the brachial nerve underneath the arm, or you can put them in a gooseneck come-along or some kind of technique that causes them pain and causes them to get up. It's called a pain compliance technique in order to get them under arrest. If instead of just, you know, crying out, ow, or going along with your pain compliance technique, they take a swing at you, at that point you're authorized to go to the next level. You can use a stunning blow. You can use your baton. You can use a takedown. You can go a little bit higher level. Now, if they continue to resist and the next level of opposition, so you got to remember, this can change from microsecond to microsecond. One can go right into the next and meld right into the next when you start one thing, or you skip some entirely. But, see, there is a continuum, a schedule escalation of the type of force you may use against the suspect depending upon the resistance you're offered. Now, clearly, you're talking about a 6-year-old child that weighs 35, 40 pounds. No. It depends upon the credibility of the resistance offered from the suspect. And all of this has to be weighed as you are using the techniques against the suspect. So, I mean, let's not pretend like it's all cut and dry and it's absolute. But it gives you good guidelines on what level of force you're allowed to use. Now, deadly force, which is described in the law, is that level of force which is likely to cause death or serious bodily harm to a person. Deadly force is only allowed, whether it's by a peace officer or a civilian, in the event of a serious and imminent threat to life or health by an offender or a suspect or anyone. So if you're going to use deadly force against a suspect, he's got to be in the process capable of or presenting imminent deadly force against you. And that can be any number of methods depending upon the circumstances. See, I used to instruct use of force in the academy and in my department. I taught hand-to-hand combat techniques, and I taught the law. So, I mean, I'm pretty familiar with it. And I used it regularly as a police officer. I was never guilty of any misconduct, save that one time that I told your host about, the guy, the junkyard dog guy. And by the way, he sued me. And naturally, the Illinois Attorney General turned it over. This guy had a 7-page rap sheet to include convictions for manslaughter, various forms of homicide twice, resistance to peace officers 10 times in the past, convictions for burglary and robbery. And believe me, they dismissed that so fast it wasn't even funny. And that was the only beef I ever had in my career.
Oh, okay, officer. You had mentioned. Thank you for your ask. Okay.
Oh, now, by the way, Phil, can I say one more thing, please? Look, I'm not objective. I am biased. I am biased toward what I saw as a police officer in my life's experience. But one thing I am not. I am not a liar. I will not lie. I did not brutalize anyone in my time as a police officer. To the best of my honor, my ethics, and my ability, I complied with the law and with the morally objective truth, but I'm definitely not objective. I am subjective. Make no mistake about it.
Okay, now I don't believe no one is here to include you, you know, as far as, you know, other officers who may be opposite of you. We're not including you in that, okay? Now, I want to ask you this, though. You had mentioned that first technique, right?
Which one, sir?
Okay. The first technique you said normally that you all would use to, in order to bring
a pain compliance.
That's using your hands, correct?
What? Yeah, yeah. Or you can use an object like a Kubotan to, you know, press against the nerve pressure point to cause pain.
Okay.
And you, also another key thing, when you're doing it, you must give the suspect a command so it's not torture. Get up, move toward my car. And when they do, then you're obligated to relieve the pain you're causing the individual, because if you don't, then it's torture.
Okay, so the very first technique to use, again, I want to ask, is using your hands, correct?
Or an object that you might employ against the pressure point on the body.
Okay, so if the hands don't work at first, that's when you use the pressure point technique, correct?
Well, no. What you do first is you ask them to comply. You don't use a pain compliance technique. You ask them to comply. If they continue to sit there and you repeatedly ask them, so you get up and move, you're under arrest, and they refuse, what are you going to do?
You're going to put your hands on them, right?
Exactly. And if they resist, you can apply pain compliance, or you might have to go to the next level. If they take a swing at you or something, you might have to use a stunning technique like a blow.
Okay.
Open hand technique, blow to the side of the head. You know, you may be your baton, because
right,
you don't have to use the exact same level of force against you they use against you. If they take a swing at you with their hand, like they're the same size as you, they're relatively young or they're young, well, hey, you can use your baton and whack them with it where you have to make them stop.
Okay, isn't there a limit as far as you, if it comes to a point of using that baton, is there a limit of stopping, as far as stop swinging on there with that baton? Is there a limit when you know when to stop using it? That's
yes.
My question. Especially,
yes.
especially when it involves more than one police officer.
Yes. You stop when the suspect ceases to offer a credible level of resistance to your use of force to effect your arrest. The whole point of using force is merely to effect an arrest. It is not to punish an offender. It's not to show you the boss and you run it. I mean, look, if cops do that, they're badge heavy. They're abusing their authority. And I know some cops do. But that's an abuse of your authority. The whole reason you're entrusted with the authority is merely to effect arrest and to bring people before the bar of justice. It's up to the courts to punish them. You're not trying to punish them because you're using force on them. You're doing what you have to do to effect an arrest.
But there are times when officers do use their badge, right?
Yes, sir, and those officers should be punished.
He's acknowledging that. He's acknowledging that.
Those officers should be punished for it. They should not be allowed to get away with an abuse of their authority.
He acknowledges that.
You answered my question, sir, and I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, also, I want to thank both of you guys for being on the show, and thank you, Sarge, for answering the question, sharing some information that we didn't have about, you know, police officers, and get to hear the different point of view. So, you know, thank both of you guys for being on the show.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Ms. Gabriella, I know you enjoyed all that, right? Okay, what happened? I guess she lost her call. Here's Mac. What's going on, man?
Yeah. I was just listening to that that dialogue. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's why, because he had said that he wanted to answer that question. I said, okay, so I went ahead and let him in and answer that question back up. And, you know, like I said, it's good to hear from a different point of view.
Yeah, but this police brutality thing, it's really a serious issue, man. And let me ask you this. Do you think black cops make a difference in the community, or do you see them? I'm just curious what you think about them.
Well, we were discussing them earlier. You either have some that just real cool, and you got some that's like Uncle Ruckus. I mean, that's really kind of what I've seen about them.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's in my opinion.
I don't think too. I think a lot of them know. Well, the ones I've came across, yeah, that's about the same. About a lot of them know good. The ones I've come across know good.
I don't know, you got some brothers as cops, man, and you know you can actually go talk to them, you know, and they ain't got no attitude. They'll try to help you out or whatever. And you got some of them, like I said, you know, they act like Uncle Ruckus. You know, like what movie was that with Bernie Mac was a cop? And he was like, I hate you, you know, because you're lips black. Yeah. You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They got some of them like that.
So you making, what's the next video you making?
I don't know. I never know. I'm completely random.
Okay, yeah.
Is it depending? Well, I don't know. This dude asked me to make a video about child support. He asked me to do that. And,
oh, okay.
Well, because this one case they had in, Illinois, was it Wisconsin or Wilmington or somewhere around there, where the guy went to courtroom. And, yeah, Ms. Gabriella, I'll see you back. And he went in and he shot the ex-wife and two cops. And he killed the ex-wife by the child support stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So one dude asked me, you know, talk about that. But like I said, I've been kind of busy with working on my website, so I ain't been really making too many videos the past few days. So
how many, allegedly, how many police did he kill, allegedly?
Let me see. He killed two cops he killed. The other one he wounded him. The wounded guy. But he killed,
How many did he, wound?
One, the two he shot yesterday, he wounded that one and killed the other one.
I thought he wounded two and killed two.
I think he did wound the other, it was two cops that was in that first car. It was two cops. And he killed that one cop, wounded the other one. Then the one he got in a firefight with yesterday, they all shooting at him and he kills one and wounds the other one. Because the other one died at the hospital.
Yeah.
I guess they didn't want to get in a firefight with Chris Donner no more. I guess why they say forget, we're gonna burn him up. Because the dude was too good of a shot.
Now, it seems like, well, what I can disagree on is, you know, him shooting. One thing I was shooting at, like, the innocent people. Now, the husband and wife. Now, I don't see they didn't play a role in him getting fired, did they?
No, they didn't. No, they didn't at all. They didn't have nothing to do with it. I don't agree with him killing. Basically, he killed the guy that was a police captain at the time, daughter. That's what he did.
He should have went after
the dad. I know, yeah. But he went after I don't know if he's playing that psychological warfare on him, because, you know, it's like, I mean, as a parent, if I had lost my kid due to something that I possibly did, it'd kill me. It'd kill me.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the part he was wrong, though. I can't co-sign it.
I don't co-sign with him at all on that. But what I'm saying is this. Like we keep saying, he still should have had a trial and got judged by a jury of his peers. He didn't get that. No matter what you're
You know they were going to give him no trial. He wasn't going to get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. The way I see it, you know, it's like this is going to get worse. Sorry, but it's going to get worse. So.
Well, it's been looking like that every year. What you think about that, Ms. Gabrielle? You think it's getting worse?
I can't say it's getting worse. I mean, it's kind of hard to say because it's not like it happens as often as it used to, like, let's say 50 years ago, but I don't know. I mean, all the cases that aren't even reported, you know, that aren't even brought to the limelight. So it's kind of hard to make a fair representation.
Yo, when you go on YouTube, I don't know, like, when we get off the phone or whatnot, I have that on one of my likes, but if you ever go to, look up a man named, it's called The Real Django Unchained. It's called Robert Charles. Have you heard of him?
No, I never heard of him.
I got him. He's in my like video. If you ever get, just type in Robert Charles, The Django Unchained. This is a guy, this was back in, like, the early 1900s, late 1800s. He wanted to teach black people to take up self-defense. Like, he was from Mississippi, and he moved to New Orleans, and he wanted to, you know, teach black people how to defend themselves with weapons from, like, Klansmen or other races. And he was caught in a white neighborhood at nighttime, and he was questioned by police, and he shot two police. And then the lynch mob was after him, white lynch mob went after him. They had him, same thing like Droner. It was like in a cabin, and he shot like 27 whites, and he killed like 8 or 10. He killed like a certain amount of police and about, I don't know how many whites, regular whites he killed, but he saw altogether, he shot 27 whites, but I forget how many got killed, but it was a good number. It was probably like one third of them. So if you ever get a chance, type in Robert Charles.
I just did. I'm gonna check it out. I got it pulled up actually. When you were mentioning it, I was typing it. So
it's real good.
I'll check it out. I never even heard of the man. So you know, like,
see what happens to the person who's, there was a black dude who snitched him out and said where he lived. I mean, where
that
was sounds
about right. That sounds about right. It's always, I told y'all, it's always somebody black that's going to damn you out or try to cut you. Always.
Yeah.
Always. It's nothing new. It's been going on. But, so thank you, kids, man, for calling the show, man, because I'm going to have to wrap this up here in a few minutes. Appreciate you, bro. All
right.
All right.
Yeah.
Miss Gabriella, well, we had a nifty conversation today, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. And the police officer called in. Well, he's a retired police officer. Shed some light on the subject. That's good. That, you know, could answer a better person to call in and explain some things, even though we were debating a little bit. So, before we go, tell everybody what you're doing, because we'll be going here shortly.
Yeah, one second. I'm actually going to post my fan page in the chat box and in my fan page in the description. Or in the About Me section, you can actually find all the links to every single website I'm on so that you guys can follow me on there if you are interested. So I just posted the link. So if you guys are curious, you can go on there and check it out.
Okay, and as always, thank you for listening. And you definitely find me, you know, where to find me at either The Advice Show on Twitter, The Advice Show on Facebook, The Advice Show TV on YouTube, and very shortly, I'll be announcing my website. Like I said, it's complete. I'm just going through the process of putting content on there and doing the final touches. I'll let you know, guys, know about that. And we'll be having a show, actually, not mistaken, Monday with Miss Kizzy Johnson. She's an author of a book. Then that show will be Monogamy Isn't for Everyone. So I'm definitely anxious to talk about that show. But anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening, and join us on the next show. Y'all have a be blessed.